are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, management, or other advertisers. This is your alternative talk station, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Now wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
And welcome you to the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World. You can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. Now, the best way to pick up the stream, go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. And by the way, while you're at the website, you can also pick up the audio archives from the past shows. We are now archiving the shows, and if you did not hear the first Sunday of this month of July's show, that was our first episode of Bees, 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 Wasps, Hornets, Yellow Jackets, you need to listen to that show. Because today is part two. And so we have a full studio, of course, as always, across the table from me. Animal World's co-producer and call screener. Animal.
That's me.
She's in the other room. All of a sudden I've got this view of Gary's knee and bare leg. It threw me. Used to looking at skin. That would be Animal World's production engineer, Gary Hill, is here. Good morning, Gary.
Morning.
I thought my job had changed. You've got your electric blue racing stripes on today. No North Face, and your shorts.
Yeah.
You're just extra comfortable with your legs sticking up in the air like that.
Just lounging.
All right. And then we are so delighted 2 weeks in a row. Animal World's co-producer and call screener is here. If she's in the other room, that would be Sandy Gaston. Good morning,
Good morning.
Well, you can see his big old leg sticking up there. See, all that skin was upsetting me.
Should I put it down? Would that help?
Well, no, I'm used to it now.
Oh, well.
Oh, now you put it down. Yeah, oh, there you go. See, that threw me off.
Just trying to help.
All right.
Just doing what I can.
Just anything he can do to make the show run smoother for our host.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. And then around the table here, we have back in the studio again for round two. Kelly Louvier is here. She is our beekeeper. Good morning, Kelly.
Hello.
And Doug Cheney is here, our wasp expert and venom collector. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Martha.
It's great to have you two back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as I warned everybody, and Sandy, unfortunately, we learned so much 2 weeks ago about bees and wasps and so forth, but I feel like we only scratched the surface. So when we had the opportunity, we signed you guys right up again to do part two. But Sandy, you're going to have to listen to the audio files.
Well, I actually did.
Oh, did you?
I did.
All right, so you learned all kinds of good stuff.
Right, so I knew I would be at least halfway intelligent today.
Yeah.
And if I had some questions, that I could get them out and not sound like an idiot.
So
I said that for Gary.
We learned so much cool stuff. Like, you know now why beekeepers use smoke.
Yes.
Which I had no idea.
I didn't know any of that. I mean, it's very fascinating.
Yeah, and that bees are at their least dangerous when they're swarming. Because
that's not what the movies tell us.
No, no.
It's lies.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'll never see another Killer Bee movie with the same eyes.
Well, we were getting it. We were talking before we went on the air here, and come to find out, Gary, male bees don't work. Because Kelly and Doug were both saying, if you see a bee doing something, if they're working, it's a female.
Yep. Same thing with a wasp.
Is that wasp? Same thing?
Same thing, pretty much, yeah.
The guys have it easy. What do the guys do?
I'll give you three guesses. The first two don't count.
Just okay. Well, that means, well, so that gives you an idea, folks. We'll be talking more bees, wasps, hornets, and so forth when we get to our subject. We are also going to have open phone lines throughout our discussion today because Sandy is here to screen your calls. And if you've got questions for our experts about bees or wasps, we want you to chime in today. And if you are too shy to be on the air, you can call and tell Sandy what you want to know, and she will ask for you. I'm going to give you the phone numbers now. Please jot them down. Sandy will be participating with us through the Animals in the News, but we'll open the phone lines once we begin our bees and wasp subject today. Local number 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. Long distance within Western Washington is 888-298-5569. And of course, you can send us an email at any time throughout the show. And that email address is animalworldlive@hotmail.com. animalworldlive@hotmail.com. And we do have some giveaways. The Animal World Prize Closet still has copies of Ann Martin's book, Food Pets Die For. So if you would like a copy of that book, you can always give Sandy a call. We're going to start with some follow-up animals in the news, the good news, about 10:50, current events as usual, and our tip will not run until 11 o'clock today, and that will be fleas, fleas, fleas. It is summer has arrived. It is hot enough now. Fleas are hatching out there, and if you need help dealing with fleas and you would like to do it the way we suggest, which without toxic chemicals, then you want to listen to Martha's four-step flea plan. That will run at 11 o'clock. All right. In the follow-up department, and I guess this is just report. Number one would be the Great American Dog Competition. It airs on CBS Thursdays, 8 o'clock. Anybody besides Martha watching this now? Sandy, did you watch this week?
No.
Gary, did you watch this? And you're the sports guy.
Sorry.
I have to tell you. Kelly, Doug, either of you guys watch?
I got busy all of a sudden. I don't have time for TV now.
Oh, okay, you're out there catching wasps.
You betcha.
All right. Well, I watched, and I have to tell you, I'm liking the show more and more. It's very entertaining, and I have to say what was wonderful this week was seeing the guys, because it's a bunch of owners and their dogs, and they're competing for their greatest American dog, and a number of the owners are men, and seeing them get emotional with their dogs this week was really quite touching, and it was quite wonderful to see these guys. I got a bunch of them in tears for various reasons this week, but emotional with their dogs. And then it was laugh out loud funny. My favorite dog is Tillman the Bulldog, the skateboarding bulldog. But one of the main competition this week was they had to groom their dogs and get them ready for a formal dinner party. And so they went in front of the judges, and the owner sat at the table. The dog was sat in a chair at the table. And then they put the dog's favorite food on a plate right in front of the dog. And they were judged on the grooming, and then on leave it. They had to command the dog to leave it alone. And I swear, Tillman the Bulldog, he had steak in front of him. and he was just like, you know, this close to taking that steak. And his owner, because you can't touch your dog, you know, and he was negotiating with Tillman. And you know, don't, no. I'll buy you a skateboard. I'll buy you two skateboards. But it was truly laugh out loud funny. So you might want to pick up on that on Thursday evenings. It's getting quite good. And the standard schnauzer got ousted this week. Week, and rightly so. The other schnauzer is going soon, but the standard, the woman was driving everybody. everybody nuts, including the dog. So she's out of there. All right. We'll balance that with the Saturday News today. Kay Baxter, founder of Sarvey Wildlife Rescue and Care Center up in Arlington. You know that she did pass away on the 4th of July. Her obituary should be in all the papers today. I'm holding the Times PI. It's quite short, actually, but it's a beautiful picture of Kay with Freedom the Eagle. And the information about the public memorial service was supposed to be, at least I was told, it was going to be in the obituary. It is not. The information about the memorial and potluck is not in the paper. However, we have it all on current events. So I will be giving you all the details if you can't be with us during current events. It is a public memorial and potluck. It will happen on Sunday, August 3rd. It's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You can get the information on the Animal World website, MarthaNorwalk.com. Click on current events, or you can go to the SarveyWildlife.org. website and get the information there, and I will give you the details in current events today, saying check that out. All right, I want to get through news as quickly as possible because there's so much more to talk about with bees and wasps. But how about we start up in the follow-up department? Mosquitoes, sort of related, huh?
Yeah.
Another public warning to be wary of mosquitoes. This article you'll find in Seattle PI was from July 15th. And they're still saying that some may be carrying the West Nile virus in our area, although it has not been confirmed. Make sure that you dump out all the containers housing water, carrying water in your backyard, wheelbarrows, saucers, plant bottoms, or pot bottoms, that sort of thing. Empty children's wading pools if they're not in use. Change bird baths at least once a week. Dump water off of tarps and out of used tires. Get rid of them. Clean garden ponds. Circulate water in fountains. Cover rain barrels with mosquito screens. Clean out your gutters so that water doesn't accumulate up there. They only need very little water to start laying eggs. Let's see. And help elderly neighbors with these actions. I thought that was a very nice thing to put in. Public Health West Nile Hotline, if you have a question, is 206-205-3883. And to report a dead crow, Monday through Friday, 206-205-4394. Okay, we talked about this last week because of the federal government that just did a blanket opening of a bunch of conservation land in the state for cattle to graze on, and they got sued. So there was a temporary restraining order was put in place. And then this week, a federal judge in Seattle ordered the federal government and members of the National Wildlife Federation, that's who sued the government over this grazing business, to find a compromise in their fight over a plan to allow grazing and hay production on millions of acres of conservation land across the country. In the meantime, the restraining order will stay in place, but they have till Tuesday, apparently, to work it out. So at least they're not just going to go in there and trash the land, and there will be some kind of compromise. This is interesting in the follow-up department. Now, this was an editorial, and you guys have got to pull this up. If you didn't see this, Seattle PI, Wednesday, July 16th, put Hemsley's billions to use in animal shelters. You know, we've been talking about the Queen of Mean, Hemsley, that passed, and all of the money she left to her dog, and then her billions of her in question, and that she wanted it to go to help dogs. Well, this editorial is by David Martosko, M-A-R-T-O-S-K-O, Martosko, and he's got a great idea that the $8 billion should go to help rescues and shelters. But he brings up a very important point, and the reason I want you to read this, if you are one that donates to animal shelters and so forth, I don't know, Sandy, I don't know about you, but I have always felt comfortable donating to the local shelters and rescues.
Right, the ones I know.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to this. It says, sadly, the infrastructure needed to make these improvements, and that would be with shelters, on a national scale simply isn't there. America lacks a national umbrella group for humane societies and other pet shelters, a group that could pass Leona Hemsley's money could put Leona Hemsley's money to work. So far, two familiar national animal rights groups, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, that would be PETA, and the Humane Society of the United States, have announced their intentions to claim big slices of the $8 billion bounty. But neither one has the track record to handle such a responsibility. Now listen to this. Look at how PETA has spent the money it already has. The group raised more than $30 million last year and found adoptive homes for 17 animals.
Mm. Oh, stop it. I did not know that.
Just 17. Meanwhile, Sandy, it killed 1,815 dogs and cats.
Where did all their money go?
It says slightly more than the number of naked interns that set out to save cows, chickens, and minks. So this guy's got... All right, now listen to this. Although much of the public and press consider Humane Society of the United States to be an actual, quote, humane society, its record isn't any better. The group's name hides its lack of affiliation with any hands-on pet shelter anywhere in America. Of the 85 million plus that HSUS spent in 2006, it gave only 4.2% to pet shelters.
That I knew.
So he says, neither of these groups deserves additional millions. We just might need a new national organization to do the heavy lifting. But I think that's really critical. If you guys are dumping lots of money into PETA and Humane Society of the United States, got to question where your money's going.
I have questions about all these large organizations.
Me too.
I say,
my money goes to the local ones, and that's why we support, that's why you don't hear a lot of the national stuff on our Shelter Rescue Sanctuary shows. We support the local ones we know that are doing the work and are actually helping the animals. Just a little follow-up on how animals adapt. Remember, in the past, Sandy, we talked about Australia's Tasmanian devil population?
Yes, yes.
That is dying off rapidly because of a fungus, because of a facial tumors, I think, that's caused by a fungus. But at any rate, they have noticed now that because of the die-off, they are breeding much sooner. The researchers say that there's been a 16-fold increase in the number of animals breeding at the age of only 1 year. Before the disease, the male began seasonal breeding at the female began seasonal breeding at age 2, and produced a litter annually for 3 years, and then she died about 5 or 6 years of age. But now they say the females have the opportunity to produce maybe one litter, and they aren't even staying alive long enough to raise them. So it's pretty serious. Okay, now here's some surprise. How would you like this? Pre-dawn swimmers in one of the pools at a popular Sydney area beach were apparently unaware they were swimming laps with a 3-foot shark that had been washed into the pool overnight by a freak wave. It's funny, though, quote, because we have swimmers who come here at 6 a.m. every morning. It's still dark then, and they must not have noticed it was there. The shark appeared to be happy swimming up and down at one end of the pool before it was netted and released unharmed back into the ocean. So, you know, always look before you jump into swimming pools. That's the lesson there. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. All right. Now, this one is worse, and this one is local. I don't know if you heard this one. Boy 17 stung by scorpion in hotel and motel in Olympia. 17-year-old boy staying at a Tumwater motel was stung by a scorpion and had to be treated at a hospital. Wendy Holman says her son Kyle was the first patient to be treated for a scorpion sting at Olympia's Providence St. Peter Hospital in 37 years. Not surprised. Motel officials theorize a truck driver from another state must have left the quarter-sized scorpion in the room. Mother says her son felt something funny on its leg. I saw him interviewed on the news. He said it felt like a pinch, actually, and then his leg started to go numb. So he was monitored for about 6 hours at the hospital. Okay, so that lesson there, what is that? Don't use motels that truckers use? I don't know what the lesson is there. Or make sure you check. Ooh, creepy.
And right. Now we have to think about scorpions and motels. You know,
I know. We should be bed bugs. Bed bugs is what we've reported on before. All right, now here's this. This you're going to have to pull up this. It's a long article, but I didn't know this. The Cadillac of Worms rules an urban composter. Did you know that people are growing these worms, like in their offices and their apartments and their balconies, to have gardens, potted gardens? It's quite interesting. Meet the new goldfish for urban hipsters. From Belltown to Capitol Hill, condo and apartment residents are making room for the red wiggler, a slender worm that eats half its weight each day and produces prodigious clumps of poop or castings, perfect for enriching pots of tomatoes, strawberries, or just about anything else. So, if you work in a city working area, I'd be a little careful in the lunchroom about big plastic bins, because they may be compost and have worms in them. So, pull up this article, Seattle Times, July 15th, Cadillac of Worms. You'll pull it up. It's a very interesting article, but apparently it's quite common now. Another article that you're going to want to read, especially since all we know about Mongolia now because of Helen and Bill Thayer and their trips to Mongolia. There's a wonderful article, Seattle Times, it was last Sunday, Mongolians Chase Heritage with Horses. And it's all about what the kids and the horses and some of the, that they live in the country with the horses, but also in the city. Things are changing over there from what we've heard Helen and Bill describe. So pull up that article if you're interested in more in Mongolia. All right, Kelly, here's the one you don't want to hear. This is the one Doug and I were discussing. I didn't know about this. Pigeon devotee pleads guilty to killing falcons. Sandy, I don't know if you know about this, but I'm going to sneeze. God bless me.
Bless you.
All right. Let's see. A pigeon aficionado pleaded guilty Tuesday in a Tacoma court to killing a peregrine falcon as a result of an undercover sting targeting bird club members accused of killing thousands of hawks and falcons. Daniel Norris, 69, was the first Washington resident indicted on evidence gathered during a year-long undercover investigation by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service into the Northwest Roller Jockeys Pigeon Club. He pleaded guilty in court of killing a migratory bird, a misdemeanor. Apparently, 11 other bird owners have been prosecuted so far, but this is unbelievable.
Now they were doing this because the raptors were getting their pigeons?
Well, yeah. Listen, wildlife investigators found that roller pigeon club members had killed as many as 2,000 hawks and falcons annually, according to court documents. Among the species killed were Cooper's hawks, red-tailed hawks, and peregrine falcons, all of which are protected by international treaty. One club member told undercover agents he had filled a 5-gallon bucket with talons cut from killed birds.
That's a lot of talons, a lot of birds.
Another told investigators he sprayed trapped hawks with a mixture of bleach and ammonia, creating a poisonous chlorine gas to kill the birds. Addressing the judge, Norris apologized. Here's another one. Let's see. Another guy bragged that he'd killed 30 hawks in little more than a month. Now, see, apparently these roller pigeons, when they fly, they fall and they roll in the sky and do acrobatics, which makes them apparently particularly vulnerable to hawks. So this guy Norris apologized for shooting the falcon and claimed he had changed his ways since being charged earlier this year. Quote, I do it a different way now, He's in Kelso. He says, quote, I let out a few of my bad birds and let the cock get one before I let my good ones out.
Nice.
But thousands and thousands of that.
The real crime is that it's just a misdemeanor. You know, these people aren't even being held accountable for this awful crime, and we don't place our animals very high up in protecting them.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good. Not good. Okay. All right. In news around the world, here's a more global warming stuff. Dead pigeons washing up, dead penguins washing up in Brazil, Seattle PI. It actually made both papers yesterday, and there's a picture of some of the penguins in the PI. It's baby penguins are apparently swept off the icy shores of Antarctica and Patagonia, and then they wash up in Brazil on their beaches. But now they're getting way more than usual because of the warmer waters, apparently, and the vast majority of penguins are baby birds and have just left the nest and are unable to outswim the strong ocean currents they encounter while searching for food. And I didn't know this, but every year Brazil airlifts dozens of penguins back to Antarctica or Patagonia. They send them back, which is if they're alive. Now, this brings up something else if you want to pull. This Seattle Times, Saturday, July 19th, Gator Egg Takers Not Poaching. This is a whole article about and photographs from Florida of how these people, they go out and they raid, and this is officially done. They raid the alligators' nests and collect some of their eggs. And this is to supplement the state gator farms, where they're farming gators for their skin and parts and stuff.
Yeah, they get like $250 for a little teeny baby once they raise them.
Yeah. So they apparently go out and they raid the wild gators' nests. So if you want all the details on that, pull it up, Seattle Times. Now, this is interesting. See, China was granted an exemption to import elephant ivory. And this is from government stashes in Africa, but apparently they're doing a better job of policing and enforcing the ivory rules, so they get to make a one-time purchase from the government stashes. Let's see, in the Empire of Nevada, they are herding out 270 wild horses because of an expected drought, and there's a photograph if you want to see them herding horses with helicopters. That you can find in the Seattle Times as well. And, the running of the bulls has happened in Spain again. The sixth day of the running of the bulls was Saturday at Pamplona's annual San Vernon Festival. 26-year-old Colombian man was gored in the butt. A 33-year-old man from Ghana suffered a broken jaw. A Barcelona man required plastic surgery on his right ear. And a 29-year-old broke his nose. And a 26-year-old broke his wrist. In six races so far this year, about a half dozen runners have been gored, although none of them seriously. A total of 473 people received medical treatment. You know, you gotta wonder why. You just gotta wonder why. Okay. That leaves us with one thing left. And that would be the best good news about animals. Good news department. Mostly I had kind of work to find good news this week. Most of them are photographs, and since we're talking about sunshine, how about moon? really doesn't have anything to do about animals. It just is one of the most spectacular full moon photos I've ever seen. So if you don't get the Seattle PI, pull it up online. It was Friday, July 18th, lunar attraction. Look at that full moon shot right next to the Space Needle. Mm-hmm. Is that
so
amazing?
Beautiful.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so gorgeous full moon. Also in the photo department. Oh, this is very cute. Hot chick. A six-day-old flamingo chick is shown Thursday at the zoo in Hanover, Germany. It's their 100th flamingo. But look at the two parent flamingos looking down at the baby. Isn't that cute?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And we have flamingos now at the zoo. So, flamingos, and did I tell you that's Seattle Times? This is out of Post Intelligencer, July 19th. India. A holy woman feeds a baby monkey, and it's at the temple. And it's just an adorable picture of her kissing this little monkey.
Oh.
On her lips. Cute little baby monkey. Okay. And then, the best photo of the week, because it's local, from Seattle, local news, Seattle Times, July 17th, Rhapsody in Blue. A great blue heron hunts for food at Meadowbrook Pond in northeast Seattle this week. Meadowbrook Pond, built by Seattle Public Utilities to hold stormwater in the Thornton Creek watershed, also provides a slice of nature for people in urban life. And look at this fabulous photograph. So it's got a reflection. The colors are gorgeous, and the blue heron, and then the reflection in the water below.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that fabulous?
It's beautiful.
Really, really quite gorgeous. So pull that one up. All right, and the winner of the best good news about animals has to do with wolves this week. And remember last week we talked about the howling experiment they had, that they did in fact find wolves in eastern Washington. They think we have a pack now. Well, they did successfully trap two of them this week. And one was a lactating female. So they've taken hair samples to DNA to make sure they're not hybrids, but they're pretty sure they're real wolves. They radio collared them, and Washington State. Now, this is the good news about this, is that Washington State still considers the gray wolf endangered and is drafting a wolf conservation and management plan. So this is really good. Before we get a whole lot of wolves in the state, we're actually formulating a plan, which is better than what they did, you know, in Idaho, Montana, and all that sort of thing.
Just shoot them.
Well, yeah, which brings me to the last story here. A federal judge in Billings has ordered gray wolves in the Northern Rockies be returned to the endangered species list. So I don't know if you heard this. This is pretty huge. U.S. District Judge Donald Malloy granted a preliminary injunction Friday restoring federal protections for the wolves. You know, they dropped the protections, and they've already killed like 137 wolves around Yellowstone and that area, and they're getting ready to do hunts. But the predator was removed from the endangered species list in March. Following a decade-long restoration effort, environmentalists sued to overturn the decision. Officials in Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho have been moving forward with plans for public hunts. Malloy's ruling is expected to derail those plans. There's an estimated 2,000 wolves over there, so I'm sure this is not the end of it. But at least they've stopped the killing for right now, and I'm sure they'll appeal and... With what's been going on in the Supreme Court, hopefully it doesn't end up there, but it may. So there you go. That wraps up news for this week. Let's take care of our advertisers and sponsors for this hour, and then we're coming back for bees, 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 wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, Doug and Kelly. Stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Did you know that even if you feed the highest quality all-natural food, even if you home cook for your animal friends, the ingredients in that food is exposed to heat, light, and oxygen, and that begins to destroy a lot of the important stuff. That's why Designing Health created The Missing Link. Now, they start with human-grade, all-whole natural raw food sources. They've perfected a way to protect it from heat, light, and oxygen. It comes to us in a powdered form in a resealable gold foil pouch. You keep it in the refrigerator once you've opened it. Mix up your animal friends' food, add in The Missing Link, and voila, you've added of what's missing, like the balanced omega-3, 6, and 9 oils, the enzymes in the raw ingredients, and the fiber. Missing Link tends to eliminate excessive shedding problems in dogs, eliminates hairball problems in cats. There is a Missing Link formula for dogs, one for cats, a vegetarian formula you can feed to both your dogs and cats and other critters like house rabbits and guinea pigs and hamsters, that sort of thing. There's a bird formula and a horse formula, and a Missing Link Plus with glucosamine in a horse and dog formula. So ask for the Missing Link wherever you shop for premium pet supplies, or you can go directly to Designing Health. You can give them a call at 1-800-774-7387. That's 800-774-7387, or visit them online, www.designinghealth.com.
Music, the stuff of creation.
What a powerful tool for healing, inspiring, and connecting us to Source.
And to each other. We'll talk about it. We'll play it.
We'll have a lively discussion with guests who are doing it.
So join us Monday and Wednesdays at 7 p.m.
Saturday mornings at 11.
Tune in to Living Music Radio on KKNW 1150 AM or livingmusicradio.com.
Oh, hey. I'm not ready. How about that? But I will be. I'm searching through for other things. I'm thinking bees and wasps. But how about this? Today's pampered pets deserve a big apology. Pets are fed the same processed foods meal after meal, which they would never eat in the wild. Research continues to prove that the more we consume processed foods, the more health suffers. Over 25 years of Dr. Wysong's research has proven that pets suffer from the same degenerative diseases plaguing their human friends. Pets don't have a choice about what's put in their bowl, and their human caretakers have been led to believe they're doing the right thing by feeding this way. Learn more at www.wysong.net. Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
You're listening to the refreshingly different Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey, I'm Martha Norwalk, and we're just getting rolling on this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. It is part two of Bees, 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 Wasps, Hornets, Yellow Jackets. In the studio with me, Kelly Louvier, beekeeper, and Doug Cheney, a wasp expert and venom collector. We are not going to repeat a lot of what we talked about 2 weeks ago, so you need to listen to the archive show if you missed that show. We want to kind of continue because we feel like we barely scratched the surface. But just in case someone wasn't here a couple weeks ago, Kelly, you are a beekeeper. That means honeybees?
Yes.
And how long have you been doing this?
About 4 years now.
How many hives do you have?
About 25.
Wow.
It grows. It keeps growing.
And do you keep them in your backyard? Or
no. I have a few at my house, but mostly they're out throughout the Snoqualmie Valley at farms, pollinating and ensuring food for us.
All right. And then you also respond for swarms of bees. You go collect wayfaring honeybees that need a new home.
Yeah. Instead of them getting killed or sprayed, me and a group of other people go and collect them, and then we take them and raise them or find a home for them.
Now, how do you go about, let's say there's a swarm in an area, how do you catch them? Well, what do you do? Vacuum them up, or what do you do?
Every swarm is different. Sometimes I will climb trees sometimes,
yeah,
and ladders, or knocking, when they're hanging like that on a limb or a tree, you can knock them down with a big stick, and I have a big box that I catch them under. I mean, it's different every time. It's kind of...
Well, you explained last time that when bees swarm, it's because honeybees, their hives...
They get crammed on space. They don't...
Yeah.
Swarming is a natural thing for bees, and it's a healthy sign. When we see a swarm, we should celebrate the fact that they're able to swarm and spread like that. That's how bees came here to North America. They were brought over from Europe with the colonists. The colonists came first and brought their apple trees and their peach trees and all these things. Well, none of them would produce anything. So they said, well, what can we do? And they said, we have to bring our honeybees over. So then they brought the honeybees over, and that's when our fruit and all the things we enjoy now, it's not native to here. And then the bees spent, a good 30 to 50 years swarming from the East Coast all the way over to here. And that's how they spread, but that is their natural nature, is to swarm. They get tight on space, and they need a new place, and it ensures that they're spreading and increasing their numbers.
So honeybee hives don't die off. They just keep getting...
They can die off. I mean,
well,
disease
with
the
colony
yes.
collapse syndrome. But
absolutely.
I mean, when things are happening as they're supposed to...
Yeah, they'll swarm, right. and sometimes more than once. It's natural.
You get how many bees in a hive?
Well,
when they get really huge?
Yeah. I mean, right now at this time, it's easy to say 100,000, 60 to 100,000 in a hive. One hive, yeah.
So then they'll make like a new queen, and then they'll take a bunch of them
they'll
off
raise
to find
the,
a new place, huh?
They'll raise the new queen, but it's the old queen that goes. The old queen will leave with the swarm, and the new one will stay there and start
again. You told us last time, I think, that bees are really at their least dangerous when they're swarming, because they know they're moving, they eat tons of honey.
Yeah, they gorge themselves, because when they leave that hive, it's a big leap of faith, because, you know, they have worked all this time to build the beeswax and preserve the hive and to seal it up and make sure that it's safe from the elements. And then also they've worked this incredible amount of labor to put honey and pollen away for the whole colony. And so when they leave, they're trusting that they're going to find a new home. And it's literally like
so
packing
up. So they've
gone
out and scouted? Do they know where they're going, or do they just go?
Before they swarm, for about 16 days prior, there's a message sent out that they're thinking about doing it. And there's scout bees that go and look for possible places. But when they first swarm, they usually swarm close to the ground or on a limb close to the hive. And then they all cluster there, and this additional scouts go out and really look for a permanent place. And sometimes they will lift up and land, you know, six times, or if they have a long distance to this great home that they found. Like I said on the last show, last year I had a swarm that literally came across Lake Sammamish over to my place.
Oh, wow.
And we watched it fly over the lake and come to me in a bait hive that I'd had, an empty hive with really tasty comb in there, and they flew right in.
Oh, so you put an empty hive out and
yeah.
they found it.
Yes.
And came. Well, now, so when people, because I imagine, Doug, that you guys get called about swarms of bees. Where do people find them? Like you said, just like on a limb of a
tree? Usually it's on a tree, sometimes on buildings. But, you know, if they're desperate, or let's say someone in Seattle is having a beehive on their rooftop or something on a high rise, you know, they may go and land on a parking meter. Or I just a while ago, I was in West Seattle and had to get one off of an intersection, just hanging on a light pole. So it just, if they have to land, because the queen gets tired. I mean, it's a lot of work to keep flying like that, and she rarely flies. So, you know, in her lifetime, other than her mating flight, one day that she goes out, the only other day that she'll see any sort of sunlight or see the outside of the hive is if she swarms. Other than that, she never flies.
So that's why they stop, is the queen gets tired. So
and they do,
to
too, sometimes.
Okay, so then they all pile on her?
Yeah, and they have kind of a quasi-space on the inside where it's hollow, and she's able to kind of crawl around and walk around, and they feed her and continue to tend and take care of her. Right. And then they're all communicating, you know, in this magical level to know when to take off and fly again.
So now, Doug, if you get called and to take care of wasps, when you go and it ends up being a bee swarm, you call the bee people, right?
Yeah.
I certainly try to get in touch with them as fast as possible, you betcha.
So, because the idea with bees, honeybees, we don't want to be killing them.
No,
no. This colony collapse syndrome and everything, I mean, they're so endangered right now. We really need to save them.
They truly are our guardian angels of our food source. They make our food. All of the fruit and the vegetables, majority of them that we eat and enjoy, is due to bees. And not only that, but things that animals also graze on, the bees are ensuring that they're producing. And it's pollination. And a lot of people don't understand what pollination is. And it's the pollen grains, which is the reproductive part of flowers and plants. The bees are transferring it from one to another, and, you know, as risque as it sounds, it's sex. It's plant sex, but the bees are in charge of it. So the plants put out these wonderful scents and this great taste, and the bees come and land there, and because they're flying and they have hair on them, they're really fuzzy. They're so cute. They look like little bears. Hmm. When they land, the static electricity from them flying, all this pollen grains collect on their fur, and then they take the time to groom it down and put it on their back hind legs, and these little pollen traps that they have, and then they carry it back to the hive, and they use that pollen, which is a higher protein source than meat, and they feed it to their young, and that's their purpose. But in that, they're creating food for us at the same time. It's so crucial.
Okay. Now, all right, so there's a swarm somewhere.
Yeah.
When you go to collect them, what I want to know is, how do you collect them? Like you said, you've climbed stuff, and that they're on a branch, you can knock them, mm-hmm. and they'll just, like, fall off?
Yeah.
So they all fall into the box, and you...
You know, like I said, every time it's different, but
like a bee vacuum cleaner or something?
Some people do use a vacuum. I don't. I just use my hands and basic tools, ladders and my legs. But, you know, I have a box that's like a miniature hive that has a top and a bottom that I can close up, and it has screen.
Yeah.
And I have a few, again, tasty, delicious frames in there that they like. And
okay, you would bring an empty hive, mm-hmm. and when you say tasty, delicious, what do you mean?
Well, usually it's empty honeycomb with leftover honey that I've extracted out of the combs.
Okay.
And they're desperately seeking.
They're attracted to honey.
Yeah, I mean, if they could find a place that had honey or empty combs, they would love to have that. So that's why those bait hives, if I put those out, they say, ooh, some of the work's already done. You know, let's go here.
So you then take a bait hive to wherever the swarm has landed.
Usually it's just either a box or a hive, and then let's say I cut that limb off, I literally would just hold the limb and place it in the box. I mean, they're that docile that they would let me.
Are you wearing a bee suit and all
that
sort of stuff?
Yeah, but I wouldn't be scared of them. I've done it without a suit. I mean, I always wear a suit just to be on the safe side. You
so
never know.
So the swarm doesn't really attack.
No, I would stick my hands. I'd stick my face up to it.
You
sure.
stick your face right up to
sure.
the swarm, please?
Absolutely. When I get out there and take a look at it, that's one of my favorite things to do is get up and look. I went to SeaTac a week ago at a school, and of course everyone's in the windows watching this crazy lady come out in this white astronaut-looking suit or space alien suit, as kids like to think. And then I'll get up really close, just like an inch away or even right next to it, and look at it. And it's in part to teach people, look, I'm not afraid. You don't have to be afraid. And I'll do it without my suit when I get there so that I can educate and teach people there really is no fear. You know, it's something that we've created that's not real.
So if you encounter a swarm of honeybees, really isn't anything to be...
Yeah, I mean, I always say, of course, respect them and give them their space, because they're in a fragile state. They're desperately trying to find a home. They're running out of their reserves. The only reserves they have is what's in their stomach. And, you know, they're waiting. And the weather turns and it rains, they may hang there for 5 days and get rained on and everything. And they have to produce their own heat and keep warm, and they're cold-blooded. And I mean, for the most part, they're absolutely safe. But, of course, you never know when you've gone up to one. Who knows if somebody's thrown something at it, or thrown water or sticks or rocks. So I always say, be cautious, call somebody and have them come out. But as far as me, I would trust me or anyone that I know to go up to a swarm. Absolutely.
All right, now I imagine that this is a little different, Doug, when we're talking wasps.
Exactly.
I don't know that you're as trusting when you go to deal with them, are you?
No, this is kind of a different critter we're talking about here. And again, it's unpredictable would probably be the functioning word there, is that usually you want to give a hornet nest or a yellow jacket nest in the ground sort of a wider berth, sort of stay out of their way. And the neatest thing is to kind of set back. A lot of times I suggest people use binoculars, and you can see that they'll have a certain flight paths that they'll use. And if you stay out of those flight paths and don't get in their way, that usually the hornets and the yellow jackets are going to pretty much do their own thing. Again, they have an assignment, they're workers, there's something that they're supposed to be doing, they're focused on this, if you can use it like the word like that, and they don't have any interest in human beings. But, you know, again, I think that there is a certain distance sometimes that you'll want to it's just like Kelly said, that sometimes people will have tweak the limb or throw a rock at it, or sometimes you get animals bothering the nest. And again, the hornets don't like that. They just want to be left alone. And if you have some sort of consistent irritation over a period of time, they kind of will, you know, they'll imprint on that and they'll get kind of an attitude to having something coming near the nest.
So if they've been bothered by a human or an animal, then they might be more testy and more defensive than
absolutely.
If they've been left alone.
Absolutely, and I'm almost sure that that explains why some things happen out there that shouldn't happen. You know, and again, people will say that they got, well, I don't like the word attack, but, you know, maybe they got a sting without doing anything. They were just in close proximity to the nest, you know.
And that's like when you were talking, when we first talked about your bumblebee nest, the red tails,
yeah.
How there was that family that got stung by them. Well, they were just totally uncomfortable and confused, and they were just trying to defend themselves, probably because dogs and everything else had been up by that little nest that was on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they're just trying, I mean, it's just like a human. If you had somebody that was bothering your home day after day after day, pretty soon you would come up with a problem-solving solution to keep this person away from you, and it would involve some sort of force.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or if you didn't, you would enlist some other sort of force to help you, and they don't have any other source to help them other than themselves.
Now, we've talked about, you know, when we're talking to Kelly, we're talking about bees.
Yeah, and bees swarm. Yellow jackets and wasps do not.
Okay,
and
so,
honeybees are the ones that swarm. So when you see bees hanging in limbs and trees, those are swarming. Now, another thing you see is you will see if they're in the air swarming, you will literally see those 50,000 bees flying in a huge cloud, and it looks like what people say is the plague, but truly they are not. They're not going to hurt you. They're swarming like that and in a big, huge clump in the air looking for a place to land. And I have video of it that my brother-in-law took of me, and I'm standing in the middle of like this 100,000 bees, and they're landing on me, and they're totally peaceful. There's nothing to worry about.
So if you happen to have a swarm coming at you,
it's nothing
to really worry
about. You know what
about?
I say?
They'll just fly on by. What if they land on you? They might do
they
that.
They won't land on you.
Oh, okay.
They know that you're not safe enough to support them and land on. But if you see one, take the time to realize that nature is showing you the most beautiful experience. I mean, it's my family, when they saw it with me, we were over at my house, and my sister and brother-in-law, my mom, we were all there. And when this swarm came in across Lake Sammamish, at first they were like, oh, I don't know. Well, once I went out and was running around and dancing in it and so excited, pretty soon they were outside with me and taking pictures. And then pretty soon they knew there was nothing to be fearful of. And they were outside celebrating in it, too. And if you see it, enjoy it. Look at it, you know?
Well, I don't know. What do you think, Gary? Or next time you see a bee swarm, are you going to be out there in the middle of it celebrating?
Sure, why not?
Now,
I haven't seen a bee swarm in a while, though. So
I've never seen one.
It's not so common anymore. We don't have as many bees. We got to bring them back, everybody. Stop spraying.
Because I'm wondering about, Sandy, I don't know if you've been thinking about this, too, and Gary, but, you know, Helen and Bill Thayer, we have them on the show often, you know, and she's the gal that walked solo at 50 years old to the North Pole. And,
wow.
You know, they go all over the place. Well, one of their big tracks was the Amazon. And, you know, they're in their canoe paddling up or down the Amazon. And a swarm of killer bees.
That's a different story.
Is it? Okay, well...
A little bit.
Well, and they told... I mean, it's just a harrowing story that they told. I mean, their choice was like... because they had the epinephrine stuff for them if they stink, but it was like, okay, they stay in their boats, they'll be in the middle of the swarm, or they jump in the Amazon with the piranhas and, you know, everything else that's in there. They decided to take their chances, and they jumped in.
They did.
Yeah, they jumped in.
See, I would have... Well,
now, so that's what I'm. So I, after hearing you talk about these swarms, I'm thinking, well, now maybe Helen and Bill didn't have to jump in.
Well,
now, so what's the deal with the Africanized or the killer bees?
Killer bees,
are those swarms not dangerous either? Or
well, Killer bees, I'll recap because we talked about it 2 weeks ago. Killer bees are originally from Africa, and lovely human scientists decided let's take them out of their natural element, yay, and take them down to South America, and let's play with them and test them and find all out about them. And
you did explain with the killer bees, the reason that they are so aggressive is because they're bigger predators and more predators
in
Africa.
Well, if they're from Africa, there's big, huge elephants and tigers and all sorts of things that have thicker fur and thicker skin, that it, you know, bees don't want to kill you. They want to get you away from their nest and their young and their babies. You know, any animal, even bears that are coming at you, they're not trying to kill you. They're asking you to please go away. And with the Africanized bees in Africa, they don't usually tend to live inside a tree, and their numbers quickly accelerate due to the fact that the heat is there, and here it gets cold. So, you know, and they have to prepare for the winter time and start cutting back numbers, where in the South or in Africa, the weather's so hot, they're constantly swarming and splitting off because they're growing so much and they're building so many babies that's why they are more likely to swarm, but they're also more defensive. So when these scientists had them down in South America, well, they got loose because, big surprise, they swarmed. Well, they quickly made their way up from South America up to Texas and Mexico and Arizona, now in Southern California. Mm. And they are different. They are more aggressive, and it doesn't take much to set them off. And that is why if you see a swarm, you know, in those areas, it is best to stay back. And even here, it is best just to call an expert, you know. I mean, it's not worth risking anything. But I can't say, because I haven't been in a swarm of Africanized bees. I would be concerned a little bit because they are more aggressive and they will chase longer. If I was brought to that experience, you know, obviously I can't say for sure what I do, but I probably would have maybe chose to stay in the boat, but that's only me. I don't know, you know.
Well, you're a bee person. and
But Africanized bees are definitely not something to mess around with. And southern states or hot places that there is, like Mexico, where it is known that Africanized bees are there. Just stay away. You don't know what you're doing. Just stay away, you know?
So, Kelly, does that mean that we don't have any, they will never get up here because we have a more colder climate up here?
Well, that's debatable because they're also hardier. I mean, they don't do as well with the cold weather, but they're also very resistant to disease, and they're strong. They're sturdy. You know, they live in, they're from Africa, you know. There's some hard knocks over there, and the weather and the animals, so, you know, that's questionable if eventually we will all deal with that. And I don't know, as a beekeeper, if eventually I will deal with that. It means you have a thicker suit and you have a bigger smoker, and you definitely have to use smoke. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, you know, in the future.
Yes, because you said last time that you don't use smoke.
Generally, I don't. I'll use it if, you know, I had a hive that has been just nasty the last couple of weeks, and I couldn't figure out what it was. Well, finally, I know. They had possums visiting at the night, and they took out two possums and killed them, and I had to clean it up. But
the bees killed two
possums? They stung them like crazy. But because in the summer like this, when it's hot, the bees get too hot in the hive, so they hang out, kind of like us hanging out on the porch. So they hang out on their entrance and fan themselves and cool off and evaporate honey, and lovely little animals come up and smell that delicious treat, and they want to go for it, and they go up, and the bees are out, and they say, hey, get away from our hive. And if they don't listen, then they'll keep stinging, you know. That sting is just to get you to go away, but a lot of animals, even bears, they will take a lot of stings because they're just in heaven. It's like Pooh Bear. When he gets a hold of that honey, he can't help it. He's in love, you know.
Wow. Wow, unbelievable. And so one of your hives, because they had been being bothered every night.
Yeah, they were testy, and I couldn't figure out why, so I did have to use a little bit of smoke. And I don't smoke them out like crazy, but I lit it, and then I kept it kind of at a safe distance just so they could smell it and start communicating to each other that there was a possible forest fire, and to maybe make efforts to start gorging themselves and get ready to abscond that hive. And as a whole, the whole hive, leaving nothing behind other than what was there, their home, leave. You know, it's like an evacuation for a tsunami or something.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I had no idea. I thought smoke must, you know, I don't know, hypnotize them or make them disoriented or something. But you explained last time that it makes them think there's a forest fire and they're going to have to move
and
their
hive. And if you use too much, it makes them sick.
They're out on the honey.
Yeah.
So they go to do other things rather than mess with you. So it allows you then to do stuff with the hive that you have to.
Yeah.
Because they're worried about packing their bags.
It would be like if you had a fire in your home and you had a pesky neighbor coming over asking you for a cup of sugar, you'd just say, I'm sorry, I can't deal with you right now. I need to get my valuables and my animals out of my house. I'm sorry. Go find sugar elsewhere.
Yep, so that's what smoke means.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Now, obviously, we have talked our way through the first hour of today's show. We're going to take a brief intermission. It won't be long. We will be back. And then we'll talk a little bit with Doug and what he experiences. We know what, you know, Kelly goes after the swarms and she's moving her bees around, but we'll find out what's involved with the wasps. And I don't know if I asked this last time if wasps.